This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're listening to The Morning Run. Continuing our coverage of the 12th Malaysia Plan, this morning we're looking at public service because the government has pledged to perform the public sector, transform the public sector, calling it out as a critical policy enabler to deliver the plan. There are many P's this morning that I'm stumbling with.
It's named after me, Philip, you see, P. However, the public service will face many challenges. I mean, there's a need to be agile and innovative in a time when volatility, external and political uncertainties are the norm. You know, long accused of being bloated and bureaucratic, we ask if our civil service can truly reform and help navigate this country through difficult times.
So to shed some light on this is Patrick Tay from PwC Malaysia. Good morning, Patrick. Now, Policy Enabler 4 calls to strengthen the public service. And this is, of course, from the 12th MP. So what were the tangible items outlined there? And how easy is it to implement these reforms?
The 12th MP identified 3 priority areas and outlined 7 strategies within them. And under each of these strategies, there are many initiatives as well. Right? So first, developing high-performing civil service by transforming the public service and developing future leaders. Second, advancing the whole of government approach, improve government administration operational activity, and enabling better decision-making innovation, strengthening governance ecosystem. Last but not least, which probably is, to me, is one of the important ones, enhancing budgeting and project management by reviewing the budget framework and process and improving effectiveness of project implementation. To answer the question, you know, like, how easy it is to implement these reforms, let's call a spade a spade. I don't think it'll be easy, but it's achievable with the right political will and the leadership from the top. Why do I have confidence in this? It's because I've seen how, you know, the civil service has responded in being able to roll out, you know, and achieve the vaccination program.
Well, I mean, you say it's not easy but possible. But do you think the underlying challenge is actually culture, you know? What kind of culture shift then needs to take place really to really truly deliver reform?
It is. So that's why I say, you know, like usually with these things, imagine the whole civil service is like a super tanker, right? So, you know, in order to be able to change the super tanker around, you need the captain to be able to steer it. So that's why I emphasize the leadership. Then I think culture is also very important. So getting that behavioral change.
But, you know, Patrick, we have tried this before, right? We've had agencies set up, Pemandu, Padu, to kind of inject all this new talent, new thinking and new leadership across all levels. It's been tough, right, isn't it? Because it's also resulted in acrimony and fights, internal fighting between the public service service. So how do you really drive freshness and innovation of ideas in the public sector?
Good question, Philip. As you mentioned, the previous experiences hasn't been easy. Now, I don't think, you know, it'll be a silver bullet and it's not a one-off exercise, it'll be a continuing exercise. And with all these exercises, as you well know, with transformation, there will be certain groups that are comfortable, you know, and they will resist the change. So, hence again, I keep going back to the point, leadership and getting those behavioral changes, because alignment and the culture, you know, are eventually changing, is extremely important.
And meanwhile, is it easy to inject new talent, new thinking, and even this new leadership across all levels of the public sector? Because for many public servants, they've been there since day one. They've been there for a very long time. So, you know, could they be resistant to new colleagues?
I think, you know, like, if I look at this, right, and if I reflect back to what I was told in my first day, right, so if I can expand a little bit on the culture thing, I think... But if I reflect back to first day in 1997 when I stepped into the New Zealand Treasury on number 2, the terrace, we were told that there were two golden rules in public service. Number one, right, you serve the government of the day, you know, right, in as a professional capacity as you can, and you do it by giving free and frank advice. And number 2, right, you always remember that it's not your decision because you're not elected. They are the elected representatives. So then if they've made a decision that you don't like, right? So for example, if they decided that they needed to transform the public service, right, and you do not like it, right? You are still, rule 2 says that you're under obligation. You actually serve to the best of your capacity in delivering that, even if you disagree with that decision. So I think to answer that question, you know, how do we overcome some of these challenges? I think we need to get it right at the start. So when we bring the talent in, we need to bring in, you know, like high potential talent, and we need to instill in them right from day one, right, these golden rules, you know, these ethical, cultural, performance norms.
Right. I mean, you're saying getting the principles essentially correct right from the start. But I want to shift our attention to, you know, let's talk about resourcing, because, you know, the 12th MP really has a huge capex of about 400 billion, and they have to execute a lot of the stimulus packages to do that. You know, where do you find the resources in civil service to deliver these plans? Is there enough? And if there's not, where are the gaps really?
Thanks, Philip. So incredibly, right, Table 10 outlines around $400 billion of estimate development expenditure, compared to the 11th lesson plan period, which is roughly around 280 billion, including the COVID fund. So the question then, as you rightly point out, is that do we have sufficient resources in civil service to deliver these plans? I'm going to give you a yes and no answer. I think, you know, like our civil service would struggle to cope with having to deliver $400 billion worth of development expenditure. This is not conjecture, right? This is just reflecting on previous performance between 2016 and 2020. There were a good number of projects that were successfully executed, but there was also a backlog of projects. Then the answer is, you know, even though we do not have sufficient resources in civil service to deliver expense, I don't think you need the sufficient level of resources, because I think, you know, and it's already been signaled in the RMK 12, right, in the 12th medicine plan, I think, you know, like, leveraging on the private sector capacity, leveraging on NGOs, etc., to help you deliver some of these projects, I think will be very important, getting that balance right.
And I want to ask you a question, Patrick, about, you know, what we can do to attract quality civil servants, because we are running a poll this morning on Twitter asking that specific questions, because I think, to be fair to all government servants, in the last 2 years, we've had 3 changes of government, yet things ran pretty well despite COVID-19. But of course, we would like even better talent. So what needs to change? Is it offering better career progression, better pay, or maybe even empowering civil servants more?
I'm quite, I guess, what firm in my views in this series, and without any necessary prioritization, I think 3 key things need to happen. I always believe in, perhaps it's the way I was brought up in the professional career, so I think that independent civil service is important. So, and I think 12th Medicine Plan acknowledged that. So there was a bit of a write-up in a section on, you know, delineating, you know, having better governance between the elected members of the administration and the civil service. So I think that's a good step, well signaled. So that's number one. Number two, I think it's quite important to actually have the right performance management framework and incentives for high performers. So reward the high performers, you know, like, and you know, like, you know, prioritize how you reward the high performers. So that part there is quite interesting. We also need to do it with compassion, right? So, you know, like, we need to make sure that we don't have a culture where you are witch hunting, etc., and all that. So if you're not performing well, I think, you know, like, let's help you develop, you know, like, but let's definitely reward the high performers. Last but not least, right, and this may sound very contradictory, but I believe that, you know, like, our civil servants are not paid well enough. So, you know, if we can, you know, like, look to keep the overall budget the same, but increase the pay of the high performers, right, increase the pay of service, then we will attract better talent into the service. Thanks.
All right, thank you for your time. That was Patrick Tay from PwC, giving us some ideas in terms of how to actually improve the civil service and their delivery.
I liked his last 3 points: an independent perspective, performance-driven, and also compensation that reflects the value they deliver to the country.
Yeah, because actually this morning, like I said, we are running a poll. How can the civil service attract quality recruits? And 37% say better pay, 28% career progression, with 20% saying empowerment. But yeah, I think if you really want the civil service to shine, you have to pay them well. But pay those that do a good job
exactly.
Well. Just like a little bit like the private sector. But also have clear KPIs, like the ministers, in terms of what the civil servants have to achieve. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.